I think it must be you. It's a, yeah, it's okay. Everybody makes mistakes. All right. Donald, how much snow you get? Yeah, freezing, whatever it was.
8 inches.
That's not bad.
All right. Had 8 inches before, so that's pretty good.
Good. All right. How bad an idea is this? Okay. All right. Where are we at here? Okay. The section we're in now is the demon-possessed son is delivered in verse 14 through 29. 14 through 29. Now, in Mark chapter 9, verse 2, we've already covered this, but I want to go over this one point. Sometimes when you go over class, you find things you didn't cover in the last class you want to at least mention because they're interesting and helpful to us. I think this is helpful. He says, now after 6 days, Jesus took Peter, James, and John and led them up on a high mountain apart by themselves, and he was transfigured before them. All right? Now, one thing here is, as he was transfigured or went up there, what did he go up there to talk about? Did we discuss what Jesus was talking about with Moses and Elijah? Because they had a topic, right? They had a topic they were talking about. And Luke chapter 9, verse 31 tells us they spoke about his decease or death. So Jesus, as he was transfigured, talked to Moses and Elijah about his decease, right? So what was this like? How did it feel like to actually let go of your mortal coil? What would that mean exactly, right? So Jesus talked about this with them. And we also talked about the idea that which mountain was it? We don't know it exactly. But we know there were 6 days between, in Mark 2 it says, in Mark 9 verse 2 it says there were 6 days. And so we see that Mount Hermon, that you see, kind of see the dot behind me, the white peak there. But they were at Caesarea Philippi, which is the other dot on the map, which is kind of far away. But if you can see the lower right hand of the slide, if you can, again, not a giant screen, but hopefully good enough for our purposes here. There is a scale of 4 miles, right? You see that small 4 miles is about that far. I don't know how you're going to squeeze it with your fingers, right? About that far. But so you can see they could get the very peak of Mount Hermon from Caesarea Philippi. How many miles is that? You think like 20 miles, maybe less than that, and then 6 days. So could they have gone to Mount Hermon and not Mount Tabor, which was very close? Possibly. Again, we don't know where they went exactly, but it says they went into a high mountain. A high mountain probably indicates a mountain which is high, which is probably one of the taller mountains in the area, which would be Mount Hermon for sure, the highest mountain. And, of course, talked about how it had snow-capped peaks all year long. Also, though, in Mark 9:2, it says that they were... Where's this man? Maybe it pointed to Keith, it'll work. No, okay. We also saw that the word transform there is the word metamorpho. Now, I put the English kind of translation from the Greek also and some Greek letters up there. If you want to be amazed at what the Greek letters look like, they're not that impressive. But it means to be transformed. To be or become changed in outward appearance or expression, as manifesting a change in nature or essence. Now, this is the word where we get the idea of, again, to metamorphosize, right? This is where we get this word in English. Now, this is the word, by the way, which we use to describe what happens when a caterpillar becomes a butterfly. It said that they metamorpho, they metamorphosize. This is the word that they change in essence, right? They change in appearance, rather, as an outward expression of their essence. So when Jesus changed, he was showing himself outwardly what he was inwardly, right? Again, he was the Son of God coming from heaven down to earth. So that also is a really neat word that we didn't talk about much. Also, this same word is used in Romans 12. But he says this, he says, I beseech you therefore, brethren, the word beseech means what? Do you remember that? Means to beg or to implore, right? Imploring. I implore you, I beg you, brethren, therefore, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. And do what? Be not conformed to this world, but be metamorpho, same word, metamorphosize, by the renewing of your mind, that may prove what is good and acceptable and the perfect will of God. So if you change your mind, you can change your life. If you can change your mind, fill your mind with good things or right things, it can change who you are. You will be a different person if you can change your mind. How do you change your mind? You fill it with new information, with other better information. That's how it works. So if I fill my mind with things that might be fun, maybe a hobby, maybe pop culture, maybe horrible things, watching news or even pornography, things like that. If I spend my life watching dirty, filthy things, will it change me? It will. Whatever I put my mind on becomes my focus, right? Jesus talked about if the eye becomes single or focused on one thing, you become that thing. So focus on light, not darkness, is what Jesus talked about. But again, Paul makes that point here too, that we can be transformed by the renewing of our mind. So this idea of transforming may not be like Jesus transforming a brilliant light, but we can change who we are by putting the right things in our mind. That's very important. Is that important when you're a teenager? Yeah. Is it important when you're father? How about a grandfather? How about someone who's elderly? Can you still change? Can you? You seem like you're not really understanding the question. Of course we can. So it doesn't matter where we are in life. We can change who we are by putting other things in our mind. You got worry, you got doubt, you got fear. Put those aside and put things in your mind that which build faith. Now doubt or hurt or anger, those things change us. But make sure you're going on the right path. Put things in your mind that are helpful like that. And also Paul talks about this in 2 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 18, where it says, but we all, with unveiled face, beholding as in a mirror the glory of the Lord, are being transformed into the same image from glory to glory, just as by the Spirit of the Lord. So as we behold the Lord, as we spend time with Jesus, what happens? We are changed. As we spend time with God in our meditations, in our study, in our life, the more we're trying to act like Jesus, whether brothers, sisters, family, friends, mother, daughter, whatever, the more time we spend with Jesus trying to be more like Him, that actually changes us. So just like our thoughts need to be changed, also when you change our actions, it can also inform or change who you are inside. So you may have heard this idea of fake it till you make it, right? That is, act like you know what you're doing. You're not trying to be guile, show guile or deceit. That is, if, for example, if you want to be a successful businessman, how do you do that? Say if you want a promotion at work, say you're in an office, you want a promotion at work. one of the key things they say to do is, at least things I've seen, not that I studied a lot about this, but the first thing you can do, Keith, is what? Change your dress. If you come to work and you're sloppy a lot of time and you're just trying to get by and make your wage, well, if you want to advance in the company or you want to advance in the business, dress like you're already there. Dress like you want to improve. Dress like you want to be someone who's respected. What's that do? It helps you. Sometimes even the things we think about dress as being a very outward, very shallow measure of who we are. But how you dress, can that affect your own mood? Yeah. Ask a lady who's going to get her hair done if it makes her feel better, right? Or ask someone who's got a new suit for a special occasion if they don't feel different when they have it on. Ah, not me. Liar. Of course you do. And so how we dress, how we act, if we clean ourselves up, that makes us feel different. The fact is, if you've had a long day and you're dirty and you're grungy and you go into the house and you want to clean up and you take a nice hot shower and you get out and you shave and you do your hair, things like that, now you're fundamentally the same person you were before the shower. Maybe a little bit less dirt, but you're basically the same person. But do you feel different? Sure you do, right? Because these things affect who we are. So not only are what we fill our mind with, but how we act ourselves can affect who we are. That has an impact on us. So those things are good to keep in mind. Now back to Mark chapter 9, verse 14. We see this, and when he came to the disciples, he saw a great multitude around them, and the scribes disputing with them. Now, again, where was Jesus? On the mount. Which mount? Not sure exactly. Maybe Mount Hermon, maybe Mount Tabor. But he was transfigured before them and spent time with Moses and Elijah. And Peter, James, and John were there, right? We got that. Now he comes down from the mountain, wherever that was. He comes down to the mountain where the disciples were, or the other apostles, and there's a fight going on. There's a fuss. All right. What's going on? The scribes are disputing with them. So there's an argument. So Jesus comes upon this argument. And what's said? He said immediately, that's the word Mark loves to use, right? This word showing action. Immediately when they saw him, all the people were greatly amazed and running to him and greeted him and asked, he asked the scribes, what are you discussing with them? So Jesus, as the scribes, what are you discussing? What are you doing? What are you fussing about? What are you talking about? Because he sees there is a dispute going on. And then one of the crowd answered and said, Teacher, I brought you my son who is a mute spirit. And whenever it seizes him, it throws him down and he foams at the mouth, he gnashes his teeth, and becomes rigid. So I spoke to your disciples that they should cast him out, but they could not. They're cast it out, but they could not. Now, this idea of seizing him, what's that sound like? It sounds like epilepsy, doesn't it? Epilepsy is a kind of catalepsy. I didn't know there are different things, but evidently catalepsy is just a general idea, and epilepsy is kind of a subgroup of that. But it means you become rigid and you seize, right? Now, and it means you lose control of your limbs. So I know all the movies and things that, one thing I find interesting was that if sometimes when it shows epileptics, it just shows them falling down and they get real rigid and they just shake. But catalepsy, and I guess this is the same general idea, but if you have your hand out, you'll seize like that, right? If you have a leg in the air, you seize like that. If you're walking mid-stride, you'll seize like that and fall down like that with your leg out, right? So whatever position you're in at the time you have a seizure, You're in that position for at least a few minutes while your body convulses and things like that. And it's very dangerous to do. You've heard about epilepsy. People can bite off their tongues. They can. Some people have seized so hard they're broken bones, right? Imagine your muscles seizing so hard it snaps a bone. That's crazy, but it's happened that way before. Well, this boy has this problem, and he falls down, gnashes his teeth, and becomes rigid. And he said, so I spoke to your disciples that they should cast it out, and they could not. Interesting. He answered and said to them, O faithless generation, how long shall I be with you? How long shall I bear with you? Bring him to me. Now, when he says faithless generation, who do you think is included in that? The apostles. Now, we're going to go on through the story here, but see what's going on here. Jesus even points to his own disciples and says, you're faithless. Now, he's not saying they have no faith at all, but he's saying their faith is very small. We're going to see that in just a second when he makes a comparison here. But now, keep this in mind, this overarching idea. So the disciples try to cast out a demon. They couldn't do it. So what did the scribes do? They start fussing at the disciples. Hey, why can't you do this? Because remember, have these disciples been casting out demons before? Remember, Jesus sent them out on the commission, what we call the limited commission. What'd they do? They healed people, they cast out demons. He gave them that power. But now they're having trouble with this one. Why? Well, let's look a bit further. Then they brought him to him, to Jesus. And when he saw him immediately, the spirit convulsed him and fell on the ground and wallowed, foaming at the mouth. So he asked his father, how long has this been happening to him? And he said, from childhood. So all this young man's life, for most of it at least, he's had this problem. And often he has thrown him both into the fire and into the water to destroy him. But if you can't do anything, have compassion on him and help us. Can you imagine the terror that family would have been in? I know this is the father being, but can you imagine the entire family? Imagine a brother, maybe a sister or two, another brother maybe, who knows? We don't know. And all of a sudden your brother's there or your son's there. Let's say you're fishing. Has a seizure, falls into the water. You think that might cause great panic or hardship or strife? Sure, what? Or being at the campfire, trying to warm yourself at the fire. Maybe you're having a conversation. Maybe you're trying to stay warm. Maybe you're just there for social purposes, whatever, and all of a sudden, seizure. He's reaching to add some wood on the fire, and all of a sudden has a seizure and falls into the fire. That would be horrifying. That would be horrifying. And so he brings him to the disciples. So Jesus is not there. So Jesus comes back. They're saying, hey, why can't you all heal us, man? Why can't you do it? Well, so the father asked Jesus, but if you can do anything, have compassion on us and help us. Jesus said to him, if you can believe, all things are possible to him who believes. Immediately, the father of the child cried out and said with tears, Lord, I believe, help my unbelief. Now, think about that verse. Now, I know there are those that say, if you want healing, you have to have enough faith to be healed. Of course, this takes into account people who believe there are actual miracles today, that man can lay hands on people and they have miracles take place. The Bible tells us in 1 Corinthians 13, the miracles were going to cease, they have ceased. That you had miracles by the laying on of the apostles' hands, the book of Acts, when the apostles died, that ability stopped. Now, God still works providentially. God can heal us that way, but miracles have ceased themselves. Now, keep that in mind. But, so does someone have to have faith to be healed? Now, can you think of someone in the Bible who had no faith and was still healed? Lazarus, when he was dead. There are other examples, but Jesus, when it comes to other people bringing people to Jesus, on more than one occasion, Jesus talks about their faith. And so if you bring someone to Jesus, their faith doesn't matter as much as the one bringing them to Jesus, right? And does it take faith to bring someone to Jesus? If you've got someone in your life who's hurting, who's sick, who's sin sick, let alone hell sick, right? Because you want them to be ready for whatever comes next. Does it take faith to introduce them to Jesus? Or you stop praying and say, ah, oh, it doesn't matter, whatever. To go to your neighbor or friend and say, listen, I want to invite you to church. I want to have a Bible study with you. Let's talk about Jesus. Does that take faith on your part? Sure it does. It does take faith. To know that Jesus can help them, the gospel can help them, the gospel of peace can help that person. It takes tremendous faith. Sometimes we don't have enough faith. Not in every case, not in your case maybe, but it sometimes happens. We don't have enough. If I don't have enough faith to share Jesus with people, I don't have enough faith. So the man says, Lord, I believe, help my unbelief. What's that phrase mean? Lord, I believe, but help my unbelief. That sounds like oxymoron, kind of, almost. I think that's very close. The idea that I believe, help my unbelief, which means, Lord, make my faith stronger. I have faith, give me more faith. Lord, I have faith, help me have more faith. Right? This is a statement that can be said by, I believe, every person in this room right now. You can say, I have faith, but I want more. I want to be stronger in this faith, right? I want more faith than I have right now. Help me have more faith. So him seeing Jesus heal his son would help that a lot. Also, Jesus himself, it goes all together, right? In our case, if faith comes by hearing and hearing by the word of God, Romans 10:17, then I can get more faith how? By studying and also living. Living, if I can live the word, that will help grow my faith as well. We'll see that later on today. But Lord, I believe, help my unbelief. When Jesus saw that the people came running together, he rebuked the unclean spirit, saying to him, deaf and dumb spirit, I command you, come out of him and enter him no more. Then the spirit cried out, convulsed him greatly, and came out of him, and he became as one dead. So many said, he is dead. But Jesus took him by the hand and lifted him up, and he arose. And when he had come into the house, whose house is this? Not really sure. Probably Peter's house, because you're back in Caesarea Philippi, right? So probably Peter's house. His disciples ask him privately, why could we not cast it out? So he said to them, this kind can come out by nothing but prayer and fasting. Now that's interesting. What's his first indicate to us? If we just take it and try and kind of open it up a bit and look at it, what's it telling us? Prayer and fasting. Why would prayer and fasting have any part to do with this? Well, Jesus is saying this one's hard. This one's more powerful than the others you maybe dealt with. That's true. But think about this. Prayerlessness is powerless. Now, fasting also has a part. We know fasting has different things. And if you've ever fasted for more than just a day or so, I know sometimes we have like medical procedures that make you fast for like 24 hours or maybe 12 hours at least. But if you ever fast for two or three days, I think that I think my record now is 6 days without any food, just water. And what that does is, and it's, don't take my word for it, because I'm not important. But the idea of fasting, if you're able to fast, that has a quality of, it kind of clarifies your mind, makes things seem more clear. What happens is after like a couple days, after you get over like the being hungry idea, you get really focused. Because your brain just really goes in overdrive, and this maybe has their reason for that aren't important. Imagine if someone who lived in the yesteryear and maybe on the prairies or plains or the mountains somewhere, and you hadn't eaten for a couple of days. Why would you need more brain power if you hadn't eaten for a couple of days? What do you think that would be? So you can do algebra? So you can maybe hunt better and find something, right? You become more clear. You become hyper-focused when you fast, right? And the idea is Jesus talks about fasting. Now, he talks about fasting in the Bible about being a spiritual thing you can do. He talks about that that Jesus said, my disciples do not fast, but when I'm gone, they will fast. So Jesus talked about, even in his time, because he was there with his disciples, they wouldn't fast. They would eat me like eat like everybody else. But when he was gone, they would mourn him and they would fast. So the idea is it has some kind of spiritual connection to make us maybe rely on God more, right? It causes us to maybe have a moment of epiphany where we might see things more deeply than we have before. That's what it does. And so fasting can be powerful. Prayer can be a part of our lives all the time. So whether you fast or not, pray, because prayer can impact our spiritual life. Just like we talk about thinking or study and thinking and also acting, prayer is part of that. Prayer brings things into focus a bit better. I don't know if your experiences, but I'm sure all of you pray to some extent. Maybe you pray once in a while, maybe you pray every day, maybe you pray five times a day, I don't know. But have you ever had a prayer and maybe shed a few tears in the prayer and afterward just feel much better? Like you feel like things make more sense now? You crazy Christians, all in your head. No. Prayer, like meditation, helps to center us and give us a sense of where we should be and where we are in things, right? It helps to give us peace. So prayer and fasting. Now, look further in chapter 9. We're going to see Jesus again foretells his death, verse 30 and 32. Jesus again foretells his death because Jesus already did this. The first time he told about his death, what happened? Peter rebuked him. No, Jesus, never. That'll never happen. And then Jesus rebuked Peter right back and said, what? Get thee behind me, Satan. Because you mind the things of men, not the things of God. How should we think? Should we think of the things of men, or should we think about the things of God? Now, we get focused on our lives. We all do. I do, you do. Everyone here gets, you know, focused on things that are happening right in our lives. That's natural. But our focus should be, Colossians 3, 1 and 2 says, on the things that are above, where Christ sits on the right hand of God. That's where it should be, right? So Jesus tells Peter, you are focused on the things of men, not the things of God. So in the grand scheme of things, Jesus said, I've got to die. But Peter didn't understand that and says, no, not on my watch, God, not when I'm around. But his focus was on what? Himself, not the things that God had in focus or had in plan. Now let's look. Verse 30. Then they departed from there and passed through Galilee, and he did not want anyone to know it. For he taught his disciples and said to them, the Son of Man is being betrayed into the hands of men, and they will kill him, and after he is killed, he will rise the third day. But they did not understand this saying, and they were afraid to ask him. Why might they be afraid in verse 32? Why might they be afraid to ask Jesus about this? Because he said it more than once, number that, and also what did Peter? Peter got in trouble. Now, what did Peter do? Peter rebuked Jesus. But they were afraid because Peter was rebuked. But why was Peter rebuked? Because he rebuked Jesus. That's why, right? They could have asked an honest question. Lord, can you please explain more? I want to understand. They didn't. But the idea of having honest inquiry about Bible things or godly things is always good. Having an honest conversation about God is always good. Trying to stifle that is bad. Now we see that in our modern day politics. There's some things you just can't talk about, right? There's been news stories, I'm sure you've seen some of them on about social media platforms that ban certain ideas or certain thoughts that are more conservative in nature, that are more Christian in nature than those that are like wild-eyed and crazy liberal ideas. That's been news a lot lately. It's been about Elon Musk and Twitter, those things, if you follow those stories at all. But there were bans against free speech about righteous or good things, right? Not those ideas. Don't talk about God. No, but we can talk about transgendering the kids or whatever. That's fine, but don't talk about righteous things, right? So free speech in America is one of the foundations. That's the first one, right? That's the First Amendment. We can't go without that. We have to have that. So free speech is good. Now, going back to Bible things, does Jesus want us to know the truth? He does, John 8:32. Jesus wants us to know the truth. How do we know it? How do we get in our heads? Study. Maybe asking questions is part of that, right? So asking questions is vital to our faith. Sometimes people come to church. Sometimes people are baptized into Christ. And they feel like they can't ask questions. That is horrible. That person will never grow like they should, right? Well, that just leads us to the next section about greatness in service, verse 33 through 41. We'll come to that next class Wednesday. Hope you'll be here for that. If not, by the way, all these slides are online. Go to highcourtchurchofchrist.org and go to sermons. Now all these slides will be up there for you to look at if you missed a verse or don't want to understand something. And also there's audio with the slides. So you can have the audio and the slides, the information there. Sometimes I'll put files up there too you can look at. Download those if you want to. But we'll pause right now and come back in a moment for worship. All right. Thank you for all your questions and comments.